Welcome, everyone. Module 10. Really excited to have this particular session. I think it's one of my favourite things to talk about. I know I do say that a bit, but I think you're going to, if you like working with clients around their goals, I think you're really going to like this session. For a lot of coaches that have been through SBCA, They've said, oh God, this changes everything. So I'm hoping I'm setting it up now, aren't I? So it's probably not going to be that amazing. But what I'm hoping is that you're going to really enjoy the approach to plans and goals. And we're going to talk about, I'll just share my screen so you can see what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about sort of aims of this module. We'll talk about courage-based planning, goals and action. And then next week, we'll kind of talk about the change cycle generally, like how humans make changes, why change is so tricky, etc. And it will be a way of sort of bringing the whole program together. So the aims of this module, if you've ever tried to bring something to life, right? You've had an idea and then you've decided, right, I'm going to do this thing. And you've maybe written down some things you need to do and you've set yourself a goal and then you haven't followed through. That is more common than the sort of linear process where you just set a goal, take some steps from where you are now and achieve the goal. That hardly ever happens. And there is a whole body of work around human motivation and potential and all of that kind of stuff. So when I was thinking about, well, you know, coaching generally tends to be about goals. Clients have goals. And they usually know what to do, but what they don't know is why they're not doing it, right? We've talked about that quite a bit. So I wanted to create an approach to bringing goals to life that supports a client to actually do more than just achieve the goal, but to learn more about who they are along the way. Because as we all know, it's not really about the goal, right? It's about who we become along the way in order for that goal to feel super achievable. So there is no right, ideal, or linear process to achieving goals. These are the kind of inputs here. As self-belief coaches, we assume that setbacks and challenges are inevitable, right, as part of any goal. And we help our clients to feel resourced. So what I found with clients is that they would have a goal. Often the goal wasn't particularly well thought through, or it was so far away from their current reality, or they rejected goals altogether, right? They sort of had this real love-hate relationship with goals. But it was all about protection. And as soon as a setback comes up, a challenge comes up, they experience self-doubt, they would often quit, or they would blame themselves for not being able to follow through, or they would kind of use that challenge as a reason to that, you know, I need to not do this. Like, this is a sign from the universe, right? So the same kind of magical thinking that we use to, you know, protect ourselves from doing the things we don't want to do, we also use that when we're doing the things that we do want to do. And what I found was that traditional approaches to goals and, you know, mindset and just kind of white knuckle your way through it just did not work for my clients, for folks with self-doubt. So what I was really clear about was that there's a kind of meta process to any goal, right, which is really about the expansion of the client self-concept. Like, who am I to do this thing, right? And so it's not really where you get to, but who you become along the way that really matters, right? And so I am suggesting that as self-belief coaches, we should always be advocating for the client's growth, not their goals. This is particularly tricky when you get really attached to a client's goal, when you get maybe entangled with their success reflecting your success, when your identity as a coach is tied to the outcomes that your client gets. And you see this all the time with clients who, with coaches who only talk about the clients that are doing amazingly well. And there's this sort of humble brag element to it all. Right. And what we know is that for a lot of coaching, you know, clients do not finish courses. Like there is a, you know, if you have a coaching program, the completion rates across the board for any self-directed learning is really, really low. Right. So who's helping those folks? Right. Who's sorting that out? So what I have found is that when we advocate for their growth, not their goals, something shifts in the relationship that we have with the client and what the client has with their goal. Because you kind of become lovingly detached to the outcome. Always a great energy to get into. So this, yeah, go Anka, please.
I don't know, it just is in my mind so loud. Like, you remember, and I don't know when it was, in the summer sometime, you coached me a little bit around if I want to change from nursing or not or something. And you asked me what my healthy self is saying. And I was like, well, yeah, my healthy self is 100% sure that I'm happy with nursing and I don't want to change it because it has all these good advantages. And right afterwards, my body broke down. But you were fully with my healthy self because my healthy self knew that this is true for me right now. And then my body said no. And then you were just supporting me along the way to notice, okay, what's changing now? What's true now? It's such a, for me, it's my hairs are standing up right now. It's such a model of exactly what you were just saying. And I'm feeling in my own whole being right now what the beautiful outcome of it is, so that we are fully 100% okay, supported, loved, cared for, whatever is true for us in the moment. And there's not somebody thinking, yeah, she says so, but she doesn't really know. So I did not feel this from you at all. I felt from you full acceptance for what my healthy self was telling myself and you in the moment you asked me. I just wanted to add it in because it's so true. It works.
I love that you had that experience, Anka. And the thing is, you know, I mean, a lot of this comes from really, I think, just recognizing that there's a real humility that comes from this work when you can kind of really trust that your client knows what they want to do. Your client knows. It may not be the conscious part of the client, right? There's sometimes the healthy self, it lives in the unconscious, lives in the body. But I always trust that the client knows what they're doing. And there is no point in me deciding that you're wrong. Because where does that get us, right? Then I end up arguing with your self-doubt. No coaching is going on at that point. Right? So for me, it is exactly what you're describing, Anka, is that when we're coaching with a client's goals and dreams, we want to invite the healthy self to lead this process. What I have found is that, and this is possibly a cliche, I don't know, maybe a stereotype, a lot of clients don't know what they want, or they say they don't know what they want. So it's that you kind of have to hold both truths. The client both knows what they want and may not believe that they know what they want. I found that particularly for women and women with increasingly complex responsibilities, it's either the energy it takes to kind of decide what you want feels too much, it feels overwhelming, or the thought of having what you want and your complex responsibilities feels too much. So the whole thing feels overwhelming. So it's better to go, I don't really have goals, right? That makes total sense to me. Yeah. So part of this is about sometimes just allowing the sense of overwhelm to be present and inviting in, you know, some playful daydreaming to maybe start with. So for me, this approach had to be really compassionate and pragmatic, right? And it needed to sort of work with clients who had a sort of over-functioning protective behavior, so that the critic and the martyr type patterns, as well as those who tend to protect themselves by under-functioning. So, you know, if you're a scapegoat or bystander, your strategy is hope and wait, or, you know, feel overwhelmed and hope someone rescues you, then those folks have goals and dreams too. So how do we help them to figure this stuff out? So I'm also really wanting to minimize those six P's, those resistance behaviors, procrastination, perfectionism, paralysis, passive behaviors, people pleasing, proving yourself. Like, all of those are just the ways that we kind of avoid the discomfort, right? So the idea is, we need to, I think, as coaches, be in the client's reality. And that's the reality, is there's a lot, often there's a lot riding on keeping the client safe. There's a lot of energy that's going into that. So the idea here is that this approach of courage-based goals makes room for emotions, for self-doubt. It provides support along the way and delegates responsibility to the client. It allows for, like, unexpected stuff to happen. It expects challenges and setbacks. We see that as inevitable. And there is both no time limit on it, and I highly recommend 30-day goals, right? So we're gonna talk about that. But the idea here is that it's not about doing the right things, right? It's more about doing things with courage. What I want to do is just take you through the process, and then what we'll do is, like, do it for ourselves, and then we'll talk about how I coach around this. Yeah. So let's do a little whistle stop tour through this process. We invite the client to come up with a courage-based goal, and we ask quite specific questions to elicit that goal. And I'll talk a bit about why that matters. We do the easiest and quickest planning process known to humankind, because how many of you have spent weeks developing a color-coded plan? Stationary lovers are us. Only to find that as soon as you started taking action, the plan went out the window because it didn't match reality, right? So we don't bother with that. We just do a really quick and dirty approach to planning. And then we get our clients into action, courage-based action, within the day, straight away, right? So there's some techniques to all of this. And what I would say as well, before I trained as a coach, I worked as a management consultant, and I mostly brought to life, like, big, complex, risky projects. Just as an example, one of the last projects I worked on, I was a program director for the British Passport. So I looked after the seven regional offices in the UK that all produce forensically identical biometric passports. So it was a big, sodding project, very risky, very high profile, squillions of civil servants and consultants and lots of money. And I worked for the company that was UK-based that used to make those passports. We had an entire team that was responsible for keeping the plan up to date and reflecting reality, and it never, ever did for the 2.5 years of that program. but the thing got delivered, right? So this is these are all the kind of false things that we tell ourselves, right? Well, if I had the right tools, if I had the right colored pens or the system for my planning, somehow it would work. And what I would say is, you know, we had sort of Oxbridge physics graduates looking after these things. No, did not reflect reality. But this is where you can bring in the humanity around it, right? Is like, if something like that, which is, you know, a multi-million pound project with tons of investment, really smart people in the room, cannot do this, why do we expect ourselves to, right? Why do we expect, somehow I should know how to do all of this, and I'm living with all of these resistance behaviors, and I've never done this thing before, and I'm really not sure if I actually can, right? So a lot of this, I think, is reassuring the client that it's whatever they're experiencing is where they're at. So we want to support them where they're at and with that reality. Yeah. So all of these things need to be taken into account, right? Your values, your intentions, your courage on any given day. You want to learn some lessons, make progress, have some accountability, get those brilliant ideas that pop up because you're feeling inspired and on a roll. Have self-doubt, have emotions, all of it's available to you. Like, it doesn't, none of these things actually stop you from making a goal come to life. I don't believe it should. Might take a bit longer, right? Might not be exactly what you were imagining, but that's what every single goal is like, right? So what you'll notice is that we've kind of come full circle, right? Remember when we started about, you know, uncovering protective beliefs, we started with the client's big goals, right? They generally have a goal in mind. And then we look at what's getting in the way, those protective beliefs. I want to share this because you can start your client relationship, like start the process of working with a client with their goals. Right. So even though this is the last module, our clients will usually have an idea of something they want to bring. You will probably have some kind of speciality or flavor of coaching that will elicit interest from clients because they have a goal around that work. Right. Maybe it's to get a new job or to grow their business or to do something different in their lives. So all to say, like, the program has been sort of set up so that I'm taking you through what we usually do in the order that we would maybe do it. And there are no strict rules with that, obviously, right? So sometimes a client will say, right, here's my goal. You could start with a courage-based plan, and then when you find that the setbacks are coming from the client, right? What they're doing instead, those resistant behaviors. If they're, you know, watching Netflix instead of, you know, sending out those marketing emails, then it's like, oh, okay, cool. So let's go and have a look at your protective beliefs, right? You can use the vehicle of a goal to look at all the ways that self-doubt might be showing up for your client. Right? I've done this in the past. I have a program that I often run, and I've called it Brave Coach Week in the past, and it's just been like a week where we do this process. You set a goal and you have a week to, you know, complete the goal, and all the self-doubt of the coach comes up, right? So we have these daily check-ins, what's happening today? And some coaches have just loved this process because even in a week they can make massive progress, even if they don't, you know, completely finish the goal, they learn a lot about what's actually stopping them from doing the thing, right? So all to say, don't kind of restrict yourself to waiting until a client has, you know, mastered their self-belief before you use goals as a way. And this can be a great place to start. So this is how we set up a goal. Right, with getting very clear on the why this matters and why it matters now. All right, so I will ask a client to think about this before they come to a session. All right, what is their goal? Why does it matter? What will happen if they achieve it? Right, what does their self-doubt say? What does their healthy self say? What will stay the same? What will be different? What do you believe will be true about you when you complete it? It's going to give you some really great information about the size and scope of the goal, the magical thinking that might be involved, right? As well as how much of the client's self-belief might be being outsourced to a goal. Right, so something to really consider when you're working with clients' goals is the goal binary. And I'll give you a classic example of this. Clients who want to lose weight. Slightly controversial example in this day and age, but a client who wants to lose weight, how are they going to know that they're on their way? They're going to be weighing themselves in. What happens when their body goes through a normal fluctuation and they aren't losing weight? Right, so then the goal is becoming binary, where something that doesn't feel within the client's control is dictating how they are feeling about themselves. Right, this is what I mean, how we use even the things we want, we can use that against ourselves, right? So just notice, where are your client's goals a bit binary or just beyond the scope of their control? Another example could be, I want this specific job, right? Rather than I want, so just to give the counter to losing weight, what if we changed the goal to something like, I want to cherish my body, right? Because there'll be something about that something about the values that the client has in their goal description. Right, and notice how differently that feels. That gives you so many options for how you can cherish your body that may or may not involve everything else to do with losing weight. If a client's saying, I want this specific job, I want to work with you because I want to get to this role. And it's like, well, what if you don't get that job, right? You know, that's beyond your control for a whole number of reasons. So what if we say, oh, we want the goal is something like, I want a job, my next job to include these things to enable me to reflect these values. Notice how then the client's empowered to make those choices. So it's just something to really think about when your clients are giving you goals, because we have not been, very few of us have sort of thought about goals as something that we can really embrace and have some fun with, right? They tend to be the things that we do out of like shoulds. Sometimes the goals belong to other people. So the whole point of like, fleshing this information out is to get to a place where the client actually feels really kind of excited about this, and it feels doable, right? It feels doable. So alongside the binary nature of goals that tend to be just need a little bit of wording, right, is also the kind of approach that a client might take to it, right? Like, so if they have a perfectionist tendency, if they tend to procrastinate, like we want to understand a bit more about how their resistance works, right? How do they quit? What happens if something goes wrong, right? So we're thinking about that as we're setting, helping them to come up with the dream, the goal, the intention, however they want to word it. I just want to pause there and just check in, see how that's landing for you. What kinds of goals are you thinking your clients are going to want? Let's chat. Who wants to start? Yeah, Anka.
Okay, so basically, I coach meditators or people who want to get back to their meditation practice or their mindfulness practice or whatever. And I've noticed that people feel kind of like they're different types, but one type is they feel they should meditate more, or they should be more mindful, or they should whatever, because it would give them X, whatever, better sleep, less conflicts, less stress, whatever their story is. But the thing, it hasn't worked because they could not bridge the should. They want to get to what they want to get out of it, but they would not want to sit. They would almost want to sit and be still. They don't like that stuff, you know? Like, and they have the concept that meditation and mindfulness practice means they have to be calm and slow and still and not drink coffee and whatever. They cannot be high energy and have fun and all this kind of stuff. And like basically bridging that gap helps them to get, but they can't get there on their own.
Yeah.
So, but basically, like you just said, like formulating the goal in a way that they can do all the way along what they really want to do, like enjoy what they have fun with. That usually is a no-brainer. That's like, that's easy. Yeah, of course I can do that. You know, like then it's out of the room, but they can't do it on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. And I think this is the thing to remember, right, is that clients bring their goals to us because they have usually, you know, it's not their first rodeo. They've had a try at this on their own. And it's either exactly what you described. They either can't get over the kind of narrow, rigid idea of what that needs to look like, or they beat themselves up when they inevitably lose interest in it. Lots of people will come to you with goals that they don't even want to do. Like, you know, I'm just writing out permission slips left, right, and center. You know, you don't have to do that. You know? So I think this is the thing that we'll often take the client's word, right, for the thing they want to do without looking at, are they actually setting themselves up for an inevitable failure just because no one said, hey, if you change, let's look at this because I want you to, I'm 100% behind you. I want you to succeed. And what I'm sensing is if you choose a goal of, I want to meditate every day, you know, I want my meditation practice to be a daily practice that I must do under these conditions, right? Like, how does that actually feel to you? But what if we made it something that you looked forward to, that you wanted to do, that felt like a way of cherishing your spirituality, that felt like a way of really, you know, spaciously opening up your world, you know, all of that stuff, right? And I guess the thing to just notice, right, is do you then end up going sort of the opposite, where you end up with a really woolly goal that the client can't really grasp hold of, right? Sort of ends up with a bit of, you know, meaningless words. So all to say, like, I think the client needs to, it's much like uncovering a protective belief. You might need to partner with the client to figure out, like, what is this goal? Like, what actually are we calling it? You know, what is it, what would it mean to do this? Why does it matter? Right? So that it means, it has meaning for the client. And it's okay, you know, the things that we think we need, like, to feel ready, to be 100%, 110. I love it when people say I'm 110% ready. I think, well, you can't be. But, you know, we those things don't actually matter that much because we tend to feel ready when we're in action. We tend to feel ready to become the person that has achieved that goal or received that goal when we're doing something towards it.
I like that you pointed out the meaning, which is related to the goal. And what I notice is always the key thing is from the belief buster. It's like, how do you want to feel along the way? Like this kind of the wish, the positive emotion. And then out of that, also from the belief buster, what would be the first thing you would like to do feeling this way, being on the way to that meaning, you know, like exactly what you just said.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, these are great questions to ask, right? And the whole point is to have a goal that feels important to the client, that they're like jazzed about, you know? Yeah, Jane.
I'm just trying to think of the kinds of goals that people I work with might have. And noticing that you talk about dreams / goals. And I think part of the kind of stickiness is that the goal doesn't feel tangible. It feels like a dream, but not knowing how to bring it to life, not knowing how to turn it to a goal. I think makes people feel self-doubt or uncertainty about whether they're even heading in the right direction, whether they're aiming anywhere that exists.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So just for clarity, the reason I use intention / goal / dream is because some people have a relationship with goals where they're like, I'm not a goal person.
I'm like, I don't know if it's to do with a relationship with goal or just knowing, not believing what they want is out there.
So, I think that, so this is the thing to really clarify with the client is their goal actually a fantasy?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it that they want something that they don't believe they deserve or they're capable of.
Mm.
Because the non-deserving, not capable goals, we can totally work with.
Yeah, I think that's, so I'm thinking, for example, of a freelance participatory artist who's like, I can't do this anymore. It's too hard. I'm like working all the time, trying to get new commissions all the time. They pay really badly. I'm not earning any money. How can I do the work that I love doing and earn a decent living out of it? And I suppose maybe it's like, is that a fantasy or is that not believing they deserve it? Because on some level, it's real. So do you have to kind of really get them to acknowledge that it...
Well, I guess this is the thing is we're all part of systems, mm-hmm. right? So if an artist in the UK in 2023 is unlikely to earn a living from their art, maybe that's part of that reality, right? Is maybe the goal is I want to feed my art in a way that feels fulfilling to me.
Mm.
And there's a separate goal about how they earn their living, right? So if it may be that the fantasy is my art has to pay my way.
Mm.
Because the system is saying we don't value that. There isn't enough to go around. Unless you're a name, we won't be giving out tons of money. I don't know the industry, but I'm just suggesting that it may be that the goal is totally beyond your control, right? So what is in your control is, can I create every day, or you know,
yeah,
and how do I feel about doing that?
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of pressure on creative people particularly to turn their passions into a job.
And even with somebody who might be running I'm thinking of somebody running an arts organization who comes to me saying, I don't know if I can do this anymore. I want to explore my options so that I can still do similar work that has meaning and purpose, but where I'm not run ragged. And this, if you look at the system, nearly all those roles suffer similar challenges. So is that, again, some really hard thinking about, do you want to stay in the system and make change and be realistic about what that will demand of you? Or do you want to put your needs first and remove yourself from the system and look at how you can have meaning and purpose and balance somewhere else?
And the thing to notice is we can entertain those notions, right? And it's easier to do that when you're not totally entangled with the client. Because we may have a value of, you know, public art really freaking matters, and we want art in spaces, and, you know, the more creative bodies that we have in the world, the better, all of that. I certainly hold those values. So, you know, the idea of someone who has, you know, rich talent that you totally believe in saying I'm out could be heartbreaking for you as the coach, right? But the idea here is that we're just saying to the client, hey, you're in choice. What feels good to you? Might not be forever, but maybe it's for the next few years. Might be an age and stage thing.
Thanks.
But I think it's a great thing to spend the time really clarifying those things, letting the client be in choice, so that they aren't committing to something or deciding to follow, you know, a goal that actually they won't be able to achieve because they have outsourced, you know, the success factors to things beyond their control. And I think this is the thing to notice about this particular context, Jane, which I think is a really excellent one as a kind of case study, is this has nothing to really do with talent or capability or, you know, any of, or deserving or any of those things, right? It's a system that the person is in, and do they want to learn to play that system's game?
And even helping somebody, you know, if you can really model that kind of healthy adult self, you have permission to make choice, then it's perhaps about uncovering the kind of covert oughts and shoulds that aren't being expressed, but that actually stopping that freedom of exploration and thinking.
A technique that I learned ages ago, just a coaching technique, to really kind of get into that, you know, what's underneath it, can be to ask why that matters maybe 4 or 5 times, you know. So, I want to make art. Why does that matter to you, you know, because blah, blah, blah. And then you get to the end and it's like, actually, because, you know, I want to be validated, right? That's the thing that's underneath it. If I have art in a public space, I am validated. It's like, okay, how else can you do that? You know, what are your other options to get that need fulfilled? Or does that feel like a need that you want to work with? Does it feel like something that actually supports you? So it just means that you're kind of opening up the client to knowing a bit more about themselves. So they may actually decide, this isn't a goal, but I know so much more about why that's felt important to me.
So they may decide to stay in the situation they're in, But because they've been on that journey, their concept of self and their awareness has changed. And so even though they might not achieve the goal, they might stay where they are with a lot more freedom and space and choice.
Exactly. Exactly. I've had a number of clients that have decided to stay in organizations that they knew were not long-term where they wanted to be, but they recognized, oh, this can be my playground to experiment with boundaries and stopping people pleasing and, you know, really taking care of myself. And this is the perfect environment for me to play with that because I'm not attached to this organization, this context, these people. And so for some folks, that's like, oh, this job that I've been resenting, you know, I've had a few clients who are like, let's see that as a fundraiser for the work you really want to do, which is the next thing, you know. Yeah, Anka, did you want to add anything?
No, I wanted to say something similar from my work with nurses. Because basically everybody goes into nursing because they love to work with people and help them, and they lose it along the way because of whatever their story is. And usually when you talk with them and they get a chance to vent about all this stuff and also clarify what they like and what they don't like, they can't do it on their own usually. And then if they see, oh, this is actually really what I like best, I would not want to do this other job which is available. I would like to do this, but I want to be free of all the load I have in it. So sometimes the coaching is already just kind of like weeding the garden so that they can already know, okay, this plant is in there and this, and now I want to get this plant, and then it's okay to go with this. And like what you just said, I can learn along the way.
Yeah. 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 I've worked with a few folks in the NHS here over the years, and it's like the coaching ends up being about detaching our, you know, need to change the system. It's like, oh, maybe I don't need to do that. You know, maybe I just need to, you know, maybe I don't need to boil the ocean. Maybe I need to enjoy swimming for a bit, you know, and that's okay. Right. That's okay. Yeah. Yeah. Weeding the garden is, it's a great metaphor. Yeah. And it can really change, because the thing is that this is, I think, that's part of the internal work of coaching, is that your life can end up looking exactly the same on the outside, but how you feel on the inside totally changes. And people sense that, you know, it's like, oh, something different about you. Don't know what's going on. Yeah, Jane.
I just thought somebody who I was coaching a few months ago, we had a follow-up session yesterday, and we'd been working on this. Her goal was a morning routine, and we'd been working on that. So I said, oh, how's your morning routine? And she went, oh, I don't need it anymore.
Love it.
I'm just really so much more in tune with what I need all the time, that I don't need a punishing routine that I have to stick to. I'm just making really good decisions, and that's enough.
Yeah. I think that's the thing, isn't it? That sometimes the goal becomes the sort of layer between where we actually want to be. Yeah, love that. That's a great sign of good coaching, Jane. Yeah.
Apart from that happened after we finished coaching, but maybe we laid the ground.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. Cassie, I just wonder if there's anything you wanted to add, like around your clients or any goals that they have that you're like, how might this work for me?
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I've been in and out. I've been up and down the stairs a billion times. Yeah, so I was thinking that idea about making sure it's, you know, staying away from the binary, and that whole example you gave of like, I want that job. Well, actually, you can't control any of that. I think that's like super interesting. So I think like really working with how you word those goals for the client, I think is really like important. And I guess from my client's perspective, I guess I have the thing between balance between work and home life.
Yeah,
which again can be very much out of your control with hospitality and the hours and things that happen. Why is it, what is it you really want to, what do you want to think or feel, or, you know, what's the real sort of, I suppose, intention behind that? And then, yeah, a lot of the times it's confidence in a new role, not necessarily a new role.
Yeah.
But how do I then show up when I'm in that role?
Yeah. It's a great example of a kind of goal as well, mm-hmm. right? Like, because goals can sometimes be about things we want to do differently, things we want to have, but often they're about how we want to be, how we want to show up. So this is, and it's, I think this is why, you know, we're laboring the point here a bit, but staying with what's the goal? Why does it matter? Getting the wording of it right. So you're articulating, you know, what you're actually interested in, you know, bringing into your life. Knowing that there'll be setbacks and challenges and all of that jazz. That's why that matters so much, is because otherwise we end up in this sort of like, oh, the goal was shit. Right? Yeah. And like full permission to change your mind if a couple of weeks in you're like, oh, I've realized I don't think this is actually what I want. I think what I want is this. Perfect. Great. Imagine that. And then you'll get the client saying, I've wasted all this time. And I just think, imagine how much more you could have wasted if you hadn't honored yourself, you know? So yeah, all good things to recognize. So once we've articulated the goal with the client, and I'll quite often spend most of a session talking about the actual goal, because you can also think about, well, what might go wrong? What are you excited about? You know, you're kind of starting to elicit good information for the client to then go off and do their planning. So this is how I recommend you plan, or you work with your clients to plan. So this is just concentric circles. It has been nicknamed the boob plan, because every time I share this with people, they're like, it's a boob. So that's kind of fun. But let's just go with that. So the idea is, what you do is you get the client to make a list of all of the things they will need to do in order to bring this plan, this goal to life. Make a massive list, all the things, even the things they maybe don't want to do, or they don't know that they don't know how they're going to do it. Just, you want to get sort of, I don't know, 10 to 20 tasks. I usually invite the client to do this outside of the session, because you can need some brain time on it. It's a great thing to do with post-it notes, right? You just write the tasks down on post-it notes once you've got your list. And then all you're doing is plotting on this plan how you feel about the tasks. Is it easy, doable, uncertain, or risky? Right, so anything that you kind of don't know, how the hell you're going to do it, what's involved, or it just feels like way out of your comfort zone, it just goes in the risky pile. And anything that's uncertain, obviously in there. If it feels doable, if you sort of know what to do, but you have a bit of feeling about it, then stick it in the doable pile. And the easy ones are the tasks that you're like, yeah, sweet, I can do that, no problem. No resistance at all. And the idea here is that if the client has, what you want to notice, right, and coach around is, do you have a disproportionate number of tasks in a particular area, right? Too many easy tasks suggests that either the client is kind of underestimating the effort or the courage required, or the goal isn't really going to stretch them. And too many risky tasks, it's like we probably need to start somewhere else, or we need to break those tasks down into something that does feel doable or easy. And then so you want to do this and then get the client to take an easy task within a day, complete an easy task within a day, right? And you want them to keep taking action every day for 30 days. That's why I love 30-day goals, because it's a doable kind of time frame. You can achieve a lot in 30 days and you get into the groove of a bigger goal, right? So I'll often say, if you've got a big goal, let's look at what can you do in 30 days and kind of create a bit of a box around that goal. The reason that this works is that even when you are left with goals that are maybe in the doable pile and you're not feeling a ton of courage, or uncertain pile and you're not feeling a ton of courage, you can usually break those down into smaller, more doable actions or easy actions. And you only need to do one a day. I just want to pause there and see what's coming up for folks and what you're thinking. How do you think that might go down with your clients?
I was just wondering about it being a 30-day group program.
Say again. Say more, rather. I'm confused.
Oh, well, just the idea of putting a time frame around the process and the idea of small, consistent actions. And if you miss a day, self-acceptance, and that maybe there's a group program around that so that you've got both accountability but also support and, yeah.
Totally.
That was all. Sorry. Right. So you're going round.
Right. So you use very few words. So I'm just interpreting what you're saying, that you run a group program to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Then yes, absolutely. That can totally work. Yeah. Yeah. And we do this a lot in self-belief school, a couple of times a year. I'll be like, right, who's up for a courage-based goal? And let's crack on with it. And it's really fun. And we have like weekly calls, lots of discussion, and yeah, exactly what you're describing. You get to explore where self-doubt comes up, where you need to be compassionate with yourself, where your perfectionism is getting in the way, all of that jazz. Yeah. And feel less alone in it as well. Mm. Yeah. Can really work. And yeah, all of those doable actions, the thing that can happen for the over-functioning folks, right, is, well, this is too simple. Right, they can get a bit judgy with themselves. Well, this is, you know, it's not, unless it's hard, it's not worth it. That kind of approach, right? And, you know, remember, the work in with the critic is always to come to compassionate imperfection. It's like, yeah, you're allowed to have fun with your goals. It's allowed to be playful.
Can you maybe say a bit more about the process of reflection and rewards? So yeah. How you might work with somebody so that they can actually see progress, because it's not linear, but it's there if they're ticking off the goals.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know about the reward thing. I'm a bit resistant for some reason.
Yeah. Well, some people love it, right? Some people love a reward. And it can feel really good to go, oh, look, I'm celebrating myself. I'm celebrating that I achieved something that I thought was going to be tricky, right? So go with the client. If they are really resistant to it, it's like, the satisfaction can come just from doing the thing, right? But you may also want to celebrate yourself. And particularly, I think, if you've got that under-functioning pattern of protection, where everything feels overwhelming, where there's a bystander and a scapegoat that are playing out there, then I found for getting rewarded for stuff can feel like a real lift. It's like, okay, when I have, you know, done these tasks, I'm going to celebrate in this way. And for others, it can seem like a form of sort of punishment, reward, depending on how we think about it. But I would just go with the client's desires there. I wouldn't worry too much about it. But I think that, you know, one of the things you mentioned, which I think is really useful, is this idea of it's non-linear. So how do you track progress? So how do you know you're... So it's a 30-day goal. So what you can do is, like, track it for 30 days. So you can give yourself a big tick when you are, doing the thing. I'm a huge fan of stickers, right? So I have these for when we do this in self-belief school, and I will put a 30-day calendar on my wall and give myself a sticker as a reward every time I take a task, because, you know, I grew up where playfulness was not encouraged. It was slightly indulgent, so I like to do that because it feels really fun. But you can invite your clients to be really creative with how they do measure progress, you know. And I think sometimes just adding in some of that playfulness, particularly when the actions feel a bit heavy or tricky, or there's a lot, you know, it feels like there's a lot riding on stuff, then it can be, you know, a way of lightening it a little bit. Yeah, Anka.
I just have some examples because I only work with playfulness.
Right.
So I'm writing these books, you know, I do it at home after my nursing work and stuff. I always have to get myself to, I like doing it, but like getting to sit down and also getting, for example, the editing part is just so boring. I'm at number 12 now. So I always do something like one thing is, for example, I buy myself cups, like what is here, like believe in magic or something, which I can then hold to and always have next to me a nice teas. And then the other one is I do the editing usually always in a coffee shop. So then we go to a coffee shop, sitting there on whatever day and enjoying this. And if I get something done, for example, before a weekend and send it off, and we go for a day to the coast or something. So like very simple things. I got myself also two warm jackets to sit here because it's cold, or these kind of gloves, like something that is adding, it's like titrating into my work. Like I'm doing this kind of thing, I'm very concentrated, but then every once in a while I can get up and have a cookie, I can get up and have a coffee or whatever I like. So all these, I need lots of those things, and then I really enjoy the work. And then when the book is done, I'm like, what, it's done already? Oh my God, I'm happy to enjoy it. So it's just my way of doing it, but I totally get, without those kind of things, I would have not written a single book.
Yeah, love it, love it. Yeah, I think Iris Murdoch said that, you know, the just a continuous stream of small delights is like the where the meaning of life comes from, and I'm a total fan of that. Yeah, I think there's anything you can do to make the process more appealing, fun, comforting in some way, you know, just sweeten the deal for yourself basically. And what I've found is that it's actually the way that we treat ourselves along the way that matters. So, you know, I will kind of prompt a client with, and while this is all going on, how are you talking to yourself? You know, like really check in on that kind of stuff, because you start to see, you know, where the protector is worried, where the healthy self might be showing up, you know, and you're affirming that for the client.
It makes me think of like bringing ritual into the moment. I have a client that's like that. She's like, okay, I finally got myself out of procrastination. I'm going to do it. I know I'm going to get myself a lovely tea. I'm going to light a candle. I'm going to put music on. And then I know I'll be like I can do it.
Yeah.
So yeah. That idea of ritual.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Even like I know for myself, I have a Spotify playlist that has not, it's just all kind of classical and sort of quite sort of no lyrics music that I'll play when I'm writing or I'm trying to think of something or whatever. And it's like, oh, I've got the fairy lights and the playlist and the tea and all of that jazz. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm doing it. It's so cozy to me. It feels really lush. And then I think that energy gets infused into the work as well, you know? Exactly. Love that, Cassie. It's really cool. Yeah. Can you ritualize it? For some clients, they love that shit, right? You know, turn over a tarot card and take that with you, you know?
Although I'm noticing my procrastinator is getting quite excited at the thought that I can just clear my desk, do all my filing, buy some candles before I have to even do anything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. So I'm hoping that this like planning process like feels really doable, really simple. Like it should be the least effort and the least time consuming, which is a bit of an inversion of the usual process, right? The other thing is that this should become quite a living thing, right? So encourage the client to just keep adding tasks, you know, adding things that they won't have thought of when they were originally planning. Let it be a living thing. Once you've completed a task, you can, you know, put it in a separate pile so you get to see the progress, all of that, you know, make it fun. But the idea is that you're then kind of in the movement of the goal, bringing it to life. And I do think that there is, at the start, it's sort of like, this feels maybe possible. And at some point it starts to be like, oh, this is probably going to happen, right? At some point it becomes like inevitable. I'm freaking doing this. Like I can see this happening, right? And that is super fun to be with the client, right? So sometimes I'll say to share with clients, like, where are you at? Is it possible, probable, inevitable? And sometimes they're like in the middle, you know, of each thing. So it's kind of moving from possible to maybe probable. And it's just a good indication of how loud that protector is. Yeah, Jane.
I've got a courage-based plan that I did after working with you quite a long time ago. And I kind of plotted everything on it and started, and then it kind of got abandoned.
Yeah.
And I found it recently and I kind of went, that didn't work, did it? Let's see what's there. And I looked and I went, oh my God, loads of this stuff has actually happened.
Yeah.
So what I found interesting was that I assumed, that's why I asked about the reflective process, because I think I assumed that I had made no progress, that yeah. I'd abandoned it. But I was quite shocked that even some of the kind of tricky, difficult things was like, oh, I'm doing all this. So, nice. Yeah, the reflective process, I think, yeah. Something about that.
Yes, and I think because it's kind of your bag, too, Jane, right? Like you're all about reflecting, then this may be a really supportive approach for your clients. Maybe they do a weekly check-in with themselves. What went well? What didn't go so great? What do they want to do differently? Like all of that is, you know, you can make this your own. I do think that what you're finding your old plan and seeing that you'd achieved most of it, I think that suggests to me that, you know, your unconscious self, your healthy self, was committed. So you don't really, this is the thing, right? It's like you don't really need the plan. Like the plan has no power. And it can sometimes be the most helpful thing for a client who's like, I just need a way to kind of, you know, a vehicle to make the intangible tangible, you know? Something that I've noticed with different coaches is that often people will have like a 30-day goal and the goal is really involves repeating habits, right? So it's like building good habits. And so they're doing maybe 5 tasks each day sort of thing that are all about building a healthy habit. And what I would say is that this can work for that as well. What tends to happen is that you just need to think about the plan process slightly differently. So it may be about duration of task or intensity of task. So I'll just give an example because I think it's probably easiest to get your mind around is if the client had a goal of like cherishing their body, and that was all about lifestyle changes that they want to make, so healthy habits, for example. What I would encourage them to do is think about what feels really easy right now. So it could be something like, oh, instead of going and buying sandwiches for lunch, I'm going to cook my lunch, and I'm going to try and do that 3 days a week. Right, so it's like the amount or the duration of the task, it's a thing you build up. Or it could be, I really want to improve my fitness, so each day I'm going to go for a walk, and I'm going to start at 15 minutes, and then by week two I want to build that up to 30 minutes. You know, it's that kind of approach. So you can use this for habits as much as you can for other more kind of finite goals. And just the idea is to, you know, start with what's doable. So because we want the client to have the satisfaction of completion, that's the whole point of that easy doable split, is that when you feel that sense of joy and pride, right? So there's I don't know if I talk about this in module 10, I must go and read that again, but there are two different types of happiness, right? Hedonic happiness and eudonic happiness. Eudonic is about meaning, and it's about pride in what you're doing. It has meaning to you. You feel some sense of satisfaction and pride. And then hedonic happiness is more about joy and, you know, a sense of enjoyment or pleasure in something. So with courage-based planning, we're edging into that first type, that eudonic happiness. We want the client to feel that sense of pride and achievement and has meaning to them, right? So all of that can be really supported through habits, through goals, dreams, whatever feels good to the client. But the key here is start with doable. There should be no resistance to the first task or in the next one. And when you do get resistance, and that resistance will show up with those six P's, it just means that the task needs to be changed. It needs to be split into a couple of tasks, or we need to do something different. Right? But the idea is that the client has a lot to choose from each day. You know, whatever is on the list, they can choose depending on how much courage they have that day. Yeah. So just the last thing I want to talk about is when a client is taking action, is to think about what obstacles will show up. So I don't tend to talk about obstacles when we're in planning mode, because that's all about like staying in the possibility of the thing. But usually when a client comes back after they've had a go at it, we start talking about obstacles, right? What's the setback? How does the protector showing up? And what are you going to do when this happens, right? So I liken it to, you know, I'm going on a trip, and halfway through the trip or a third of the way through the trip, there's roadworks. So we've got to take a detour, or maybe you get a flat tire. But it's like you don't, in that circumstance, abandon your car at the side of the road. Right? You figure a way around it. So what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Like, what's the way around it? How can you support yourself? So the thing to notice is that most of those obstacles are going to come from the client's protector. So you're just interested in, you know, what does it say? What does it want you to do? What choices do you have? How can you do this differently? Because you usually you'll know what happens if you just carry on following the protector's idea. So at this point, you're at a choice point, right? You're at a key moment. What can I do differently? What do I want to decide? I think sometimes when we are at those choice points, that can be the thing that makes all the difference, right? It's like you make a new, different choice, and suddenly you're like, it's possible for me to do something other than what I usually do. Yeah, what choice do you have? I shared this with a supervision group a couple of weeks ago. When I was doing my master's degree, I was on a train and I had an essay to write. Sorry, Cassie, you've heard the story. I had an essay to write and I'd already asked for an extension and I had a 3-hour train journey. And it was like, if I don't finish this freaking essay now, I'm going to miss my extension time. And that means I will fail my master's. Like, I just won't. It had lots of consequences. So I remember sitting on the train and for about 20 minutes, I just prevaricated over, do I quit? Fuck it. I'll just quit. It's too hard. You know, all of that. And then I just went, I know what's going to happen. I can see that playing out. I want to do something different. And I ended up doing a bit of a shit job. And my essay didn't have a bibliography in it, which my professor was very displeased with. I got the lowest mark of my whole course from that essay. And I ended up at the very end, I was 2 points away from distinction. So if I had actually organized myself before that and got a higher mark, then I would have got distinction in my MA, but I didn't. So, but it was just such a, like, I'll never forget, like, that moment of going, no, I'm bloody doing this. And now I have that memory, I know that I can pull it out of the bag and it's going to be imperfect, and but we all make our choices. There's something about those moments where if you do something different, you kind of then change a story about yourself that you tell yourself. And I think it's such an amazing thing to witness in a client as well. So obstacles are going to happen. That's all part of it. Of course, inevitably, it won't go to plan. Nothing ever does. It's not meant to. Like, how could you have known at the start? You're not a fortune teller, right? So what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Oh, I love that. Yeah, love that, Jane. You've had that same experience. Yeah. So cool. So cool when you get, like, good people in tertiary education when you're an adult student. Yeah, love that. So my invitation to you is to come up with your own 30-day goal. And just really go for it. Use your... I'm so glad, Cassie, that helped you get out of procrastination. Yeah. Use this process to achieve something within 30 days. Like use your practice pods as a support mechanism for that. Ask for what you need. You can use the discussion forum on the learning site. Whatever feels good to you. But notice this, like, how it feels to do this process. Notice what you're learning. If you want to use this with clients, then I 100% recommend that you play with this yourself and see what you find happens for you. It will also give you really good insight into what questions you might have for me or for Scott as you're playing with this stuff. Yeah. Any questions, comments, shares before we end today?
I just had a bit of an aha moment when you were explaining the boob, just because I am a list maker. So I always will do a plan and I love a list. And you know, in my corporate world, I would do the whole like colorful, color-coded Excel spreadsheet and everything else. But then you kind of, you don't see it and it's closed on your computer because you put all the time and effort into doing that. Or a list I have, but then the list just feels really overwhelming. And to just do something so simple of do the list and then go, okay, what's risky? What's easy? What's it? I just had a bit of a, oh my God, why have I not tried that before? And then to be able to see it visually, whether you do it as post-it notes or whatever, especially if you're a visual person, which I think I am. Yeah, I had a little bit. So I'm quite excited to go away and to have a go myself. Just thought I'd share that.
Amazing. I'm excited to see where you take it, Cassie. And if Jane's example is anything to go by, you can do the plan and bung it, and then you'll still do it.
But I think we're taught to do the polar opposite. I think we're actually taught to do those linear timelines and make those lists. Yeah. And we're almost told if we just cherry pick all the easy tasks, then we're not doing the work.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it is really interesting psychologically to kind of turn that on its head.
Agree. And I've shared this process now with hundreds of clients, and it's insane to me how much this works for people who also have maybe limited energy capacity. Like I worked with a woman who had some sort of like, I don't know if it was ME or something like that, right? But her energy, she did not have the full kind of allocation of spoons of energy every day. And she used this to turn her doodles into like a greeting card line. And it took her twice as long as she was expecting. And she was like, but that's okay. I've freaking done it, you know? It was just so beautiful to watch. And I just share that as one example. But business owners who have finally delivered a course using this, or they've got a line of products out, all of it. I mean, sometimes they'll do it as 3 30-day goals back to back, you know, and there's like a kind of design, create, market type approach to it. It works for all of those things. But I think you're exactly right, Jane.
I'm being really talkative today, but I'm also thinking that I've got a whole wall of pinboard here. So I love flip chart paper and post-its. And for a long time, I've had flip chart paper that's been like, here's my 3-month plan, here's my 6-month plan. And I spend a lot of time moving things from September to October to November. And every time I do that, I feel like I'm failing. Whereas if it was a courage-based plan and they were in the uncertain, just because I haven't done them yet is not a failure. And if I want to then, if I consistently don't do them and then they feel like not important, I can take them off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it is, it's these approaches where you just go, okay, that doesn't work, so how can we do this differently? You know, and for me, it was like, let go of time, because that is, it's a made up thing too. So, amazing. I hope you play with this, and I'd love to know how this rocks out for you all. I'm excited. This is good fun. And next week we'll talk more about kind of bringing this all together, behavioral change, all of that good stuff. I think it'll be a fun session. So I look forward to seeing you. All right. See you. Take care. Bye-bye.